Hi, this is Attention Plus with Arnab Ray, episode 74, recorded on the 23rd of February, 2020. Updates on the US election and more coming right up. But first, let me quickly remind you of our YouTube channel. That's at youtube.com/talkingstuffnet. You will find videos for makers and creators, smart home and tips and tricks. So do check it out and hit the subscribe button while you're at it. And now we have our host Arnab. Hey Arnab.
How are you doing? Yes.
Arnab, you mentioned there was an earthquake. How big was this?
Yes. Those of you who follow me might see this, that it's at odd hours. Usually at night, I'll suddenly post a tweet. There'll be a tweet from me which just says earthquake.
So yeah, normally just had the word earthquake, right?
I normally do that. So in case I die, there is my last tweet is very dramatic. And all of you know why I died and how I died. So it's strange, this. I stay in a place which is very earthquake prone. The locality that I stay, there was a very severe earthquake in the 90s, which really flattened this place. There was a huge mall which got absolutely obliterated. So this place is an area of very high seismic activity. And for the last 2 months, I think we had, I wouldn't say major earthquake, but we had, first of all, the houses here are all built for earthquake. So if this was, let's say, if we were staying in the East Coast, these things would possibly have brought down a few structures. But over here, at least the houses are built to be resistant to earthquakes. So unless it's something major, nothing happens. But it was woken up suddenly at like 5 o'clock at night with the bed and the walls shaking. And it was a low intensity earthquake, but it was very close to where we stay. This is the second time in the last few months that there was a low intensity earthquake, which is, I would say about 20 miles of where we stay, which is nothing.
So the epicenter was very close, you mean?
Yes, it's 20 miles is a very close earthquake for an earthquake. So it was very violent. I mean, it was a short earthquake, but it was very violent. And no matter how you, and this is something about California, which I am always amazed by, because I don't quite like the state of California. So I don't understand why people love the state so much that they're willing to pay this amount in terms of real estate to stay here. Like, it's not a question of me. It's the richest people in the world stay in Hollywood, which is, again, within a 20-mile radius of this place. So they can stay anywhere in the world if they want to. But they choose to stay here. And I wonder why, given the amount of fires and earthquakes and other things which are very damaging and which honestly cannot be prevented. This place really must be amazing for people to still live here. And I haven't been able to figure out, and it's almost 2 years now that I've been staying here, what exactly that magic thing is that everybody seems to be able to see, but I can't. So before we start with the main topic of the day, it was very interesting to see Trump's tweet on Parasite.
Did he?
So did you see that, Vikram?
No, I saw his Bahubali tweet.
Bahubali tweet? I didn't see that. It was in one of his rallies. He said that, do you see the movie that won Parasite? I long for the old days when we would have Gone with the Wind winning. So basically what he was saying was that to his base was that I long for the day when Stories of White People won Oscars. Now, you have a foreign culture, you have people, none of whom are Americans or look like Americans. When he says look like Americans, he basically means white, winning Oscars. So I found it was interesting. And I found it was interesting because it's precisely because of the message. It's not just so much, I don't think, or perhaps Trump has seen Parasite, because that's he does watch a lot of television and he doesn't do a lot of work. So he must be doing something, since I guess he's not meeting porn stars that often nowadays. But have you seen Parasite, by the way, Vikram?
No, it's still not. In fact, it's playing. And would believe it or not, it's running houseful, especially after the Oscars. It did one.
Yeah, of
Oscars.
Course it will. So again, this is spoilers for those of you. Can we mark this on the podcast so that people can skip over this if they feel that they they would not like to hear spoilers for
Paris. I'm going to cover my ears as well.
Oh, you're going to cover your ears. Okay. So I will try not to, again, I will try as much as possible not to give away the story. Okay. But if you, for those of you who haven't seen Parasite, you know, why is it such a masterful movie? It's because of, and again, since Vikram hasn't seen it, I can't go into the level of detail that I was going to go into. But look at this use of space in the movie. I found that to be the most unique thing about Parasite. Again, forget the story and everything. There is the use of space. There are three spaces in the movie. One is the house. One is the place where, quote unquote, the parasites stay, which is half outside and half inside. And then there is that place below the house, which is absolutely down below, where there's no light or anything. And if you see, watch through the movie, and even again, I'm trying not to tell you what these places are or what's going on in these places, but the allegory of the story, what it really is. And even if you haven't seen Parasite, it's a nice thing to keep in mind when you see it. It's not just the class, you know, the well-known class struggle, which if you see it, if you haven't seen it yet, you'll realize it very soon enough what it's actually about. But those of you who have seen it, think of the three spaces that the people inhabit in that movie. And what the movie is trying to say, and it's trying to say a lot of things, but one of the things which I found really unique, and again, it's not unique in the sense that the message isn't so unique, but the way it's shown, is that the real struggle is actually between the people who are half outside and half inside. That is the family that is shown there. That is the aspirational middle class, who don't consider themselves poor, but are actually poor. But, you know, they're trying to get educated. If you look at the guy who becomes the driver and his children, the boy and the girl, they're much more polished. They look like they can fit into the world above. And the girl definitely can. So, but it's just one bad day away from that half light, half darkness into full darkness. And the real battle is not really the old communist idea of the poor versus the rich. The actual battle is between the poor and the even more poor. And the rich are pretty much safe. They have a line above which, and if you see the movie, the rich guy keeps on saying, there's a line. I like people who know where that line is. And that line that he talks about is, he's not meaning in this metaphorical sense, but that line is multiple times it comes up, this line, if you look at the movie. And so I would recommend again for those of you who haven't seen Parasite to see Parasite so that I can at least talk about what a great movie it is in terms of the layering of meaning in a movie. It's fun. It has got multiple genres in it, but also it's the kind of movie that makes you think once you have left the theater. And Vikram, I don't know why you're not seeing this movie. It's pretty much one of the best movies that have won an Oscar for years.
In fact, I wanted to ask you this. There is this another movie that impressed you a lot and it didn't make any noise in the Oscars. That was Us, which I still haven't seen because it's still not available anywhere online.
Us again is very similar to this in the sense that it's also, you know, it has this notion of people who live up above and people who live below. But Us is a very good movie too, but this is much more subtle and it's much more well thought out, I would say.
I didn't think that Us would have at least had some amount of Oscar buzz. Though, of course, like I said, I've not seen it. It's just based on what you spoke about it.
In general, Oscars look upon genre entries poorly. So there is a bit of a formula here. So in general, if you make an out-and-out horror movie, it's usually going to be ignored. This is a strange thing, but... And I think I understand that this also holds true for literary appreciation. If you write a horror novel, if you write anything, it's a thriller novel, it might sell, but nobody considers that to be first-rate art. It is always considered to be kind of a children of a lesser god. So there's always a problem with genre movies. Again, having said that, Jordan Peele's first movie, which was, what was that? Get Out. So Jordan Peele's first movie, Get Out. Did have a... it might have... Did it won...
I think it won for the story or something.
So Get Out was nominated. Jordan Peele's first movie, which was again in the horror genre, did get nominated for Oscars. But I think that Us is a better movie than Get Out. But Us, the racial politics is not that front and center. It is there. It's not racial politics. It's more poor versus rich. And I think that that again, so in let's say the woke politics of the Oscars, that kind of reduced the attractiveness of Us, even though it's a much better film, much better in terms of as a movie than Get Out.
Okay.
So it was kind of got, you know, it didn't get the attention. And also I think this year was particularly good for movies in general. I thought that the nominated movies were, and there are some good years and there are some bad years. This was typically a good year, I think, for the quality of movies that were nominated. So moving on to what we wanted to talk about, since we haven't talked about US politics for a long time and on this show, and it's kind of been moving along. It's kind of taken a very surprising, I would say, rather surprising turn in the road right now. Because when the Democratic primaries were starting, and again, this is, I guess, almost a year now for when the preparations started. I mean, the consensus was essentially that it was going to be Trump versus Joe Biden. If Joe Biden was going to run, nobody else really had much of a chance against Joe Biden. And the Democratic establishment and their core voters were pretty fine with Biden because he was looked upon as a safe person. And whenever they say safe, what they mean is that this person has had a long experience in Washington, D.C., which again, depending on who you talk to. So if you talk to establishment Democrats, they will say that a person who has long D.C. experience knows the way Washington, D.C. works and is more effective in getting legislation passed because it's about consensus. It's about consensus building. It's not so much about extreme positions as it's about moving forward. Like there is a whole number of forces pulling in different directions. There's the lobbyists, there is the core, there is the progressive wing. And a good candidate is someone who is able, who himself or herself has moderate opinions and who is thus more willing to work with different forces and is more compromising in a good or in a bad way. And of course, those who oppose this, the extremists, say this is essentially code for corruption. This is essentially code for not doing anything, of keeping the system as it is intact with some minor change in garnishing, but essentially nothing changes. So the Democrat core has felt that, especially with Trump, and no matter what you think about Trump, there is no doubt that Trump is an extreme candidate. Under him for the last 5 years, the kind of rhetoric, the kind of, in general, the way the courts have changed and the way a lot of things have changed have been, I would say, again, whether you agree with them is another thing, but have been extreme. Let's just agree on that. They have been extreme. It has been, and this is a topic for, you know, whether it's good or bad or whether it's a reaction to what has happened before, again, is not really what we will be looking at today. I want to look at today as how the pundits again got it so wrong with respect to Biden. So Biden was looked at as a fairly safe candidate. He was looked at a safe candidate because he also had a moderately a progressive record as a legislator, which is very important in this day because even the hardcore base of the Democrat Party, which is, think of it as Hillary Plus, they know that Twitter is important for their young new base, the energized base. There's always the core group of people who don't talk too much, but who will on the day of the election show up And then there is the people who generate a lot of heat and noise, who might or might not show up, but at least on Twitter are influencers, and they generate a lot of conversation. So the Democrats know that ultimately it's the base which wins them the elections, but they also have to cater to that noisy fringe. And Biden was seen to be pretty okay with that noisy fringe too, because Biden has some fairly decent progressive record, which actually many Democrats don't have. I mean, there are, of course, chinks in his armor, like anybody who's been in politics for 40 years. If you have to understand that the definition of what is considered to be progressive has changed radically over the last 40 years. So when you have been in politics for 40 years, there's obviously been things you have done which are under the prism of today's extreme ideological purity will obviously come out looking not that good. So I think his major failing of Joe Biden at that time was recognized as his behavior during the Justice Clarence Thomas confirmation, where Clarence Thomas was a Republican judge who was accused of sexual harassment by one of the people who used to work for him, Anita Hill. And Joe Biden's behavior during that was considered, let's say, less than stellar. So even though he was a Democrat, he basically openly sided with Justice Clarence Thomas. And he's since of course, expressed regret. But the fact is, he actually, without him, Justice Clarence Thomas wouldn't have been confirmed. So again, it's looked upon in Washington, D.C. circles as, an example of his ideological malleability, the fact that he can bring people together. But in the days of Bernie and Warren, people who bring people together are essentially sellouts. So people should not be bringing people together. And this is true for Bernie, Warren, and Trump, is that bringing people together is a sign that you're corrupt, somehow, morally or actually corrupt. So the more extreme you are, the more unyielding you are, the better. So, but the Democrats again thought that Biden was going to be the best candidate. Number two was Kamala Harris, who has since dropped out. So Kamala Harris was thought to be somebody who was solid, much younger than Biden, was not carrying that amount of baggage, was African American and a woman, so she had a double minority card for holding to, and that was why Warren Kamala Harris in her initial engagements always kept on de-emphasizing the fact that she's Indian and the fact that she's African American. And that was why she was essentially caught. It was really the first time that, and I think Kamala Harris had a very bad time in general with her Indianness and with another Hindu person who basically ruined her on the debate. That being Tulsi Gabbard. So I think she had, and on top of that, she had to do a video and eat Mindy Kaling's dosa.
Yes.
So I think she's had it fairly bad. I think that after this, she will never ever accept any kind of Indianness. So she's not had a very good time. But the thing about Kamala Harris was that she was considered to be, she had that thing which Joe Biden did not have, that they recognized that Joe Biden is not meant for television. He's very prone to gaffes. He also has, to be honest, he has a stammering problem. So he has to control that stammering problem when he gets up. So a part of his mind is trying not to stammer. And and when you get up in front of somebody like Trump, it's of course one thing that Trump is great at is being a bully to your face. He's great. He's possibly the world's greatest bully ever. So when you have somebody who's struggling with a speech problem, go up against this guy. There was some kind of like, would he be able to hold up in a debate? Because in America, these things matter. It's not just your policies, it's the way you come across that really, really matters when they look at leaders. So there was that thing. But in general, Biden was seen to be the ideal candidate. He was old, he was white. And he has some support in what in US are known as swing states, which are really the states which ultimately affect the final verdict. Because most states, they don't really care about who's on the ticket. They just go either with Republican or with Democrat, usually. They're all fixed. There are only a few states which swing from one side to another. And that to a few marginal counties which turn it. So it's not even the entire state. So in those swing states, which Hillary lost all of the swing states, Biden was seen to be a much more safe candidate. After that, Kamala Harris was seen to be a safe candidate. Because another thing that's very good about Kamala Harris is that she's a prosecutor, and she's very, very good, or was considered very, very good in debates and one-on-ones. So she was considered to be the person that Trump really can't do anything against, except that she got blindsided, that they were looking at essentially a white male candidate to come and attack her, and she was considered to be impervious to any attack by a white male, except she got attacked by a brown female. That she was not looking at. And that's exactly what happened when Tulsi Gabbard basically ripped her apart on stage, just ripped her apart. She ripped her apart on Kamala Harris's prosecutorial record, which she was running on. So basically, for those of you who have forgotten or haven't been following this, what Tulsi Gabbard said was that you prosecuted African Americans for essentially possessing marijuana. You put so many people in jail, and then on a radio show, you go and laugh and say, "Ha, I have had marijuana too." Now, I honestly feel that she didn't have, because she's, of course, Tamil. So I'm pretty sure she didn't do that. Those were all things she was making up. But she got caught. I mean, she got caught. And that was such a terrible image of this person laughing, claiming to have done the exact same thing for which this person sent people to decades in jail for. So she basically ripped the heart out of her campaign within a few seconds. And this is why debate performances are so important. And we'll be coming to Bloomberg and the exactly same thing that happened to him in the last debate. So you build things up, and within, and especially in these days of memes and social media, and where the Democrat Party cannot really control the media like they used to. Before, there were just a few channels which were run. Before Fox came in, there were just a few channels. All of them were sympathetic to them. So they could essentially manipulate the story. And last time during Hillary's campaign, when Donna Brazile was from CNN, was essentially involved in giving questions, like leaking the question paper to Hillary Clinton before the debates, you could see how in bed the channels and their owners were with the traditional components of the Democrat Party. That's always been the case. Last time it just became so obvious. Anyway, so this was really what the pundits were saying. That it was either going to be Biden or it was going to be Kamala, and ideally Biden as president and Kamala as a vice president. Of course, Bernie was going to run, but Bernie, the outlook was terrible with Bernie. For one reason was Bernie's health. Bernie was struggling with a cardiac problem. So he actually had a heart attack during this campaign. And people just felt that he's too old to do another huge round of Democratic primary and then the presidential primary. He just can't do it. And secondly is because of what happened last time with Hillary. In America, there is kind of a bias in the sense that once you lose to someone like that, people think that you're basically over, that you can't come back again. You only get one chance at the king. And if you can't do it, then you'll never do it again. And so by the consensus was that this guy's Bernie's time had passed. That 2016 was his time. This time maybe Warren would get the progressive vote, but ultimately the electoral juggernaut of Biden would be too much for anybody else. Perhaps Kamala. And they were saying that Kamala would possibly be that progressive centrist hybrid who could also potentially be a contender, because she was going to get significant progressive support because of the double minority, because she was good on television, because she didn't have many of the disadvantages that Biden had with respect to his speech or her record. So it was pretty much even Stevens between them, maybe with Biden ahead, because Biden had a much better hit. When you're in politics for 40 years or even more, you've cultivated networks and links with donors. So you can basically call people and get millions. So, and now we're at a stage where, as the Las Vegas results come out, that's the third state that that now Bernie has won straight up. And now Bernie is, he's still not nationally ahead, but he's basically winning everything at this point of time. Now, why did this happen? So that's what's interesting. And the interesting thing is, of course, Kamala Harris's campaign imploded after that terrible 30 seconds. And then Biden, and we had brought that up before in a previous podcast, is that the Democrats didn't realize that their foolish attempt to impeach Trump, this attempt was going to backfire on them. And it has, actually. Nancy Pelosi kind of understood that. But the progressive wing, the more energized base, the word for that is kunnas. That kunnas led them down to something which they shouldn't have done. They knew from get-go that Trump cannot be impeached because they don't control the upper house. So unless the upper house votes, Trump will not be impeached. It doesn't matter what, even if he's killed someone, as he's once said, I could shoot someone on Fifth Street and nothing will happen to me. He was actually perfectly correct. Nothing will happen to him. Because what the Democrats did was, the thing about Trump is that he has that Salman Khan factor about him. And the Salman Khan factor about someone is that it doesn't matter what he does. Like Salman Khan doesn't matter what movies he does or what reviews he gets. Salman Khan movies will be seen by a certain number of people, no matter what that movie is, because it has a bhai in it. So Trump has that level of support. And in India, Modi has that level of support. So not every politician is blessed to have that kind of support. The only person in the Democrat Party who has that kind of support is Bernie Sanders. He has exactly that kind of bhakt. There are Bernie bhakts, just like there are Trump bhakts. It doesn't matter what that guy is saying. They love him. And nothing you can do. So what the Democrats did was, they did not and were not able to make any chunk out of Trump's support base, because they just dismissed it, all of it, as fake news. They dismissed all of it as yet another attempt to take out their winner of a president. And this actually made their sense of being victims of the deep state even more validated by this. So they basically did this. Is, you will find parallels with this to Indian politics also. This whole Shaheen Bagh, as I've been saying, you know, with recently in Bangalore, this person shouting Pakistan Zindabad. This is exactly what the BJP wanted, and they got it. So as more these things, more these extreme things happen on the other side, more this, you know, this Pathan guy says, you know, 15% of us, you know, this is not a protest against either the BJP. This is really what the BJP wants to happen, and it's happening. It's exactly what happened with Trump. This is exactly what Trump's minders wanted to happen, and that's exactly what happened, that they decided to go for the impeachment. And with the impeachment, what was ended up being brought up was Biden's son's corruption or Biden's son's involvement. And remember, Biden does not have the Salman Khan factor about him. It's not as if people will vote for Biden no matter what comes out about his family. As a matter of fact, he's always on shaky ground. Nobody feels passionate about Joe Biden at all. At least some people could feel passionate about Kamala Harris, but there was absolutely 0% passion on Biden. And he's the guy who is going to be most affected by something like this. And that's exactly what's happened. It's not a coincidence that the person who's really been put into hell by this whole impeachment thing is Biden. Ironic. So now we have seen that Biden is slipping everywhere. He's not even coming. So it's now a one almost equal battle between Pete Buttigieg, who again nobody had given a chance. We'll come to him before the elections began, and Bernie. It's essentially one very, very progressive, very Salman Khan character with somebody who is being propped up by the Democratic base, which is the people who run the Democratic Party. Now, there is, right now, everybody, the Democrats are afraid of Bernie Sanders. It's coming out in everything. A few days ago, New York Times ran a innuendo-laden article which says Bernie Sanders is being helped by the Russians. This is like the last card that the Democrats like to play nowadays to tar and feather somebody who they don't like. Hillary used that against Tulsi Gabbard, and now Hillary's local newspaper, New York Times, is using it against Bernie Sanders. So why don't they like Bernie Sanders? Why don't Democrats like Bernie Sanders? As Pete Buttigieg said in the debate, that the choice shouldn't be between somebody who is not a Democrat, which is Sanders, who's not a Democrat. He's never been a Democrat. He's just running on the Democrat Party. And somebody who wants to buy the party, which is, he was referring to Mayor Bloomberg. So the fact is, Bernie Sanders is not seen to be part of the Democratic Party, which technically is true. And the fact is, the Democratic Party is also afraid of that Salman Khan halo that he has around him. The fact that he's impervious to anything that the Democratic Party could do. He, just like Trump did last time, where he showed the middle finger to the Republican establishment, he basically ripped out the heart of the Republican Party. He took out the Bushes, who had basically ruled the party for decades. He just wiped them out of the Republican Party. He took out Mitt Romney. He took out every chief, every satrap of the Republican Party was destroyed by Trump. And that's exactly what the Democratic Party is now afraid of from Bernie. They're afraid that Bernie supporters are going to call out this heart of the Democratic Party and replace it with people like AOC and the people who come with them, that progressive, somebody would say loony left part of that party. Democrat Party will shift from being essentially a centrist, left centrist party to an extreme left party. And that's exactly what will happen if Bernie gets on the ticket. And another thing is that ultimately, there's a part of the Republican Party and a part of the Democrat Party which are almost identical. They represent the status quo. They don't want to disturb things. And that's why Obama, for instance, it's well accepted now that Obama has privately warned people against Bernie Sanders. That Obama, who's still a very influential figure, is telling Democrat donors, don't go for Bernie Sanders. Because what he's afraid of is that Bernie Sanders will essentially replace the Democratic Party with a single person, I am loyal to Bernie thing, which is exactly what the Republican Party has become. There's no Republican Party right now. It's all loyalty to Trump. If you're not loyal to Trump, you're not Republican. What they're afraid is that's exactly this where the Democrat Party is going to go to. And in this day of polarization of the centrifuge effect, Bernie is the perfect foil to Trump, except on the opposite side. He's take no prisoners, make no compromises. Anybody who makes a compromise is corrupt. And that gets a lot of support in this day and age. But the Democratic Party, they know that he's the kind of person who, even if first of all, they're worried that he won't be able to get elected. Because why do they think they won't be able to get elected? Because if he gets on the Democrat ticket, then there will be a massive flow of money from traditional Democratic donors to the Republicans. Each of these billionaires in the US, even who are liberal, even those who never will donate to the Republicans, will actually go over to Trump. Even though they might hate Trump and hate his politics, but they will know that actually Trump will not come for their money. They know that. But with Bernie, they don't know where it will stop. Because their main thing is what Bernie is now saying isn't really what he wants to do. He wants to go even further. This is just step number one. When he says there will be no billionaires, is that a rhetoric or does he actually mean there will be no billionaires? So that's why Bernie puts the fear of God into the billionaire class in the US. And that's what they're afraid of, that come elections. And that's which brings us to Bloomberg. There's a section in the Democrat Party, which Bloomberg has been a Republican. He's almost an anti-progressive within the Democrat Party. He's never been within the Democrat Party. But they look upon him as, okay, maybe the solution to Bernie is just someone who can buy his way to the top. Because right now, The problem with Biden is he neither has the money nor does he have the support to go to the top. He's just not getting the votes. So can we get somebody who's essentially outside the party, because apparently nobody in the party has got it, to essentially buy their way and dethrone Bernie? So they're that desperate. That's why for some, Bloomberg doesn't look to be a bad alternative. Because again, Bloomberg being a billionaire is not going to come after any other billionaire's money. He doesn't believe in the things that Bernie believes. This thing about Bernie is, whether you like him or you hate him, if you go and listen to his speeches for the last 30 years, he said the exact same thing. So what he says comes from a very deep-seated belief. It's not that he sways with the wind, that he says one thing one day, another thing one day. No, he said the exact same thing. Even when he was a small town politician in Burlington, who nobody listened to. I remember I've seen Bernie, like, before he became famous, appearing on television shows. He looked like a crazy guy, you know, saying crazy things on Bill Maher. From that, he's now like almost there to be the Democratic nominee. So, you know, people who have followed US politics have seen him going from like a very, very sidey, very radical, you know, somebody who comes on television shows and talks. Like, I'm kind of struggling with an analogy that I can give in Indian politics of somebody who's that. Maybe in a way, Yogi Adityanath, you can say. So Yogi Adityanath was not seen to be, he was always called the fringe, even like 4 or 5 years ago, and then he became the chief minister of Uttar Pradesh. So he's kind of like an Yogi Adityanath-like figure, but on the other side. And so people are very uncomfortable dealing with that level of ideological purity, with that person who won't compromise, because they're afraid that he's there to basically change the system and burn the system down. And that's not something which the Democrats stand for. For instance, he's saying that he wants to abolish private insurance, private health insurance. Private health insurance is a $1 billion concern. And there will be massive layoffs. People, I mean, just can't take something like private insurance off just like that. He's saying no private insurance for anybody. And so this is a massive amount of disruption. This is just not the American way. This is the kind of a Mao kind of way where we decide, okay, these guys, we are going to relocate them. It just doesn't happen in a market economy that government comes and shuts down a massive, you know, a massive industry just like that. Warren is saying she wants to split up the big tech companies. Again, this is not something which really happens in the US. You know, companies basically run this country, and there's nothing like this too big to fail unless they fail. So these things are essentially radical ideas in the US scheme of things. And with Bernie more than Warren, because Warren, you have to remember, was initially a Republican. So that means that she has changed her stance. But the thing with Bernie is he's never changed his stance. So they are absolutely worried that he comes across as exactly a mirrored image of Trump, in the sense that one thing that you'll have to accept about Trump is that whatever he said he would do, he has done. He has done it. And that's the great thing about him. Whatever he said, he's done. And they're afraid that Bernie is exactly the same thing. Whatever he's saying, he will do. By hook or by crook, he will do it. And that means that we have lost control. The Democratic Party, the core people who run this country have lost control. They have already lost control with Trump. The Republican Party has basically lost control with Trump. The core Republican Party, everybody has essentially left now. I mean, what Mitt Romney did was, Mitt Romney during the impeachment, he was the only person who voted for impeachment. There was essentially a last-ditch desperate Tom Hanks in Saving Private Ryan firing the gun kind of gesture. That's the last thing that he could do. Basically, that's the end of the old Democratic Republican establishment, where the last standing Republican basically openly declares revolt and shoots himself in the head politically. So
you didn't talk about one candidate, though. Last time you mentioned Amy.
Amy Klobuchar. So I'm coming. So Amy Klobuchar with the center, the let's call them the Obama Hillary combined. They know that Biden's not going anywhere. I mean, they can try, but Biden doesn't look to be. He doesn't seem to have it. So which brings us to who has it. So there is Pete Buttigieg, who's the mayor of Indiana, and he's going, I mean, he's really cornering the centrist. He's cornering the centrists now. Again, he's another guy who they don't know anything about. He's a mayor in a small town. He's like, you'd be like the mayor of Medinipur, you know, a small town in Medinipur, perhaps in India, somewhere. So this guy has not been in Washington. They don't know. He's very young also. So he's an unknown quantity. They don't know how to deal with him at all. So maybe he's not as extreme as Bernie. He's not as extreme as Bernie. He's definitely can be negotiated with. So he's not a total disaster. But again, he's not part of that circle. He's not part of that cool boys club. So he's a kind of a village guy. Perhaps he would possibly be like a Lalu Yadav figure coming from Indiana. So they don't, these guys who are the Yashwant Sinhas and all, they don't know him. We don't know what this guy is, what he stands for, where he wants to go. Amy Klobuchar, on the other hand, is perfect. He is within that circle. She's again been in DC for a long time. Again, she's a woman. And she seems to be having much better. I mean, people didn't give her any chance, but she's done very well in the debates. Every time she's gone on the debate stage, she's made an impression. She has this nice, you know, very humorous way. She attacks people, but she also has this nice sense of spontaneous sense of humor. So in America, where a lot of this is popularity contest, I mean, the reason why Trump is so insanely popular is because he's fun to watch. When you put him on, he's never boring. He's always doing something. Whether on his tweets or whether in his public appearances, he's there. He want to watch him. He's Salman Khan. Amy Klobuchar has some of that. So she has that spark. Again, with Kamala Harris out, she is being kind of being made up as maybe she's not a bad candidate. Maybe because she's never really stood for anything, maybe she can stand for everything. And at least they know that she's reasonable, which means that she doesn't have any core beliefs. She doesn't have any core agendas. She's well open to be influenced as long as she's put on the ticket. So a lot of the Democratic establishment are now looking at Amy Klobuchar seriously, with Biden almost gone. And again, they can come back. American politics, still early season. So the real waiting thing is California. So California is like very important for the Democratic primary. And whoever wins California essentially is almost there. And I'm in California, so I want to see how this rolls out. So the word is that Bernie's really concentrated on California. See, one of the biggest reasons why Kamala Harris was considered to be such a strong candidate was because she is from California. So she was expected to win California. She actually dropped out. The trigger for her dropping out was when she realized, or when her donors realized, that she didn't have a chance in California also. And she didn't want to come to California and then lose, because that would really destroy her career if she loses in California. So she basically dropped out. With Bernie, the major problem that Bernie has always had, and he had this problem in 2016, was that even with his progressive stance, even with his Medicare for all and free education for all, he was not that popular with the African American electorate. There was just no name recognition that Bernie had. Many of them didn't know who he was in 2016, though Clinton had very good name recognition because of that last name. This time, so South Carolina, which is the next, which is the next state in which the primaries are going to take place, is primarily an African American state. This is the first primarily African American state where a Democrat primary is going to be held, and people are saying this is where Biden will have to make his stance. If Biden can't take this, then Biden is gone. This is the state he has to take. Otherwise, he should just drop out at this point of time if he can't take South Carolina. But even if, say, let's say Biden takes South Carolina, the big prize is California. And this is where Bernie's newfound support with African Americans and what he has cultivated since 2016 is outreach to Hispanics, who are a huge thing in California. And for them, Medicare for all. Remember, for African Americans who have been part of the voting electorate for decades now, the Hispanic is the vote bank is fairly new, but the African American vote bank that Clinton has had cultivated for decades as their core constituency. This time there's no Clinton. This time it's up for grabs. So people felt that from Clinton's it would go to Biden. But it doesn't seem to be a sure thing now. But the good thing that those behind Bernie's campaign, like Ro Khanna, have done is that Ro Khanna, who's again a California guy, is that they have been working for years, you know, making the Bernie ground game here very strong among Hispanics, which means that he is well prepared to take California. This is really why Obama is so worried. You know, Obama is a very intelligent guy. But now him and his people now see that Bernie was much smarter than they thought. That he'd been working for this for a long time and they didn't catch on. That he's actually built. He was well prepared. He didn't seem to be well prepared. And Bernie, whenever you see him, he looks like kind of disheveled, like he just woke out of bed, and he just doesn't give off this thing that he's you know in control. But the fact is, he is. I mean, at least the people behind him are. And so this is a fascinating time to be following US politics, because you have, will Bernie be able to win against Trump is another thing. Maybe he won't. That's the fear that people have. And the Democrat establishment's only last card that they are basically playing to everyone is, I know you guys love Bernie, but do you love him more than you hate Trump? Like, are you okay with putting him up against Trump if he is going to lose against Trump? And that is the frustration that people like Hillary Clinton and their ilk feel with Bernie supporters, is that if you ask them the question, they'll actually say, yes, if Bernie doesn't win, we don't care if Trump is the president. And that's not the answer they want to hear. That's what why they feel that Bernie supporters are not, they're traitors, they're not Democrats. Because they don't have loyalty to the party, they have loyalty to Bernie. And if Bernie is not there, they're either not going to show up or they might even go and vote for Trump in spite, which is what Hillary feels that they did last time, even though she hasn't any data to back it up, but that's what she feels. So that's the problem with Bernie. So they feel that if Bernie doesn't win, Bernie might win. So it's bad on both sides. If Bernie doesn't win the nomination, then Bernie fans will stay home or vote for Trump. If Bernie does win, they will definitely show up. But again, that doesn't do things. There are many people who otherwise would have voted Democrat, or perhaps not even voted, but would have given money to the Democrats, who will go and switch sides. They will either keep the cash in their pockets, or worse comes to worse, they will actually give money to Trump. So that's really what they're afraid of, that with Bernie at this stage, there is no good outcome for the Democratic Party. So again, this is fascinating, and I'm going to be following this story at least for the next few months. I mean, and see where this goes. And it's always nice to kind of observe this as a interested third party. And plus the good thing about following US elections is there's so much great content written about US elections. Unfortunately, for Indian elections, there's not a lot of great content. There's mostly Arnab Goswami and the ilk shouting. But with US politics, if you turn on, there's people living, there's a lot of crap also, but you know, a lot of like Times Now and Republic TV and NDTV level analysis also here. But some places there will be some people who even in 5 minutes will provide you a very, very good overview and a very logically consistent thing, which often is something which you won't read. And so that's a good thing about watching US television, is that you get really good content if you know where to watch. So that's it for today. I don't know how long this episode was today, but I'm trying to concentrate a little bit on, I had a poll out on Twitter whether you guys want a half an hour program or an hour program. And again, my main thing is, if I have a topic, I'm going to talk about the topic till I'm finished. So it doesn't matter if it's half an hour. But what I've been trying to do is, if I have crossed, let's say, half an hour on one topic, I'm not going to start another topic at that point of time. So I have a poll out and I want you guys to vote to see how many people want a 30-minute-ish show or a one-hour-ish show. Because I've been getting conflicted messages. So some people say that their commute is 30 minutes and some people say their commute is an hour. So the 30-minute commutes want a 30-minute program and an hour commute want an hour program. And many people say that, you know, seeing a 60-minute or a 75-minute show just intimidates them and they don't even get started. So I want to see how this works. Again, this is the only way we understand what you guys really want. So again, people say, you know, Arnav, don't hurry things. You know, we like to hear, you know, detailed analysis. And that's what I'm going to do. I am not going to stop till I feel that I've finished my analysis. But if I've gone over half an hour, I'm not going to start another one. So I will try not to do that. So that's it for today. I think I've gone over half an hour for this. So I'm not going to be discussing anything else today.
All right. I think it's basically a battle between the commuters versus the people who listen in the gym. Let's see who votes
for. So the people who listen at the gym want it for an hour? I thought they would want it for 15 minutes. But I'm thinking about myself at the gym, of course.
Let's see. This would probably be a more interesting poll than what's going on. But yeah, that's our podcast for today. And yeah, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, though, can you please rate the podcast and leave a review too? And in case you forgot, there is a way to support this podcast and just visit patreon.com/greatbong and you can contribute to Arnav. And there are, I think, three tiers, right, Arnav? If I remember.
Yes, there are three tiers.
There are three tiers with hilarious descriptions.
You can go and read the tiers there.
Yeah. Okay. So until next time, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.